Taking that work break. Welcome to episode 31. Grab a coffee, a donut, and then join us for an analysis of the latest IT news, vendor moves, and new product announcements. We'll separate the signal from the noise, or at least make some noise of our own. I'm Drew Conry-Murray, and with me as always is Greg Farrow. Greg, starting off, a story came in from our friend Matt Oswalt. Apparently HP applied for a patent on continuous delivery, and it produced significant outcry on the intertubes.
Well, for some people, for those people who write code and, do check in and check out. But the long story, of course, is that continuous integration and continuous delivery has been going on for at least a decade, probably longer. And for HP to suddenly come along and try and patent it is your classic case of the wrong incentives in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, certainly that was the upside of the blog, that there's a ton of prior art available and that this patent application is ridiculously broad. We'll provide a link to the story if you're interested in helping out and digging up some more prior art to add to the pile. I think it's an indication of the patent system itself, which is, to my mind, deeply broken.
A bit of both, right? So first of all, companies like HP and Cisco actually encourage staff to write patents. I was talked to a few different people who work for, you know, all of the big vendors, and basically they will pay a bounty if you can get a patent registered. And sometimes what you'll do is down in the engineering teams, they will send around the lawyers and say, "What are you doing?" And then the lawyer will go, "That's patentable. We'll lodge a patent." So regardless of what the engineer thinks,
yes.
And this has all the hallmarks of a lawyer saying, "Well, we can patent that."
Yes.
And goes off and patents it. And the engineer is sort of looking at him going, "Dude, you're an idiot." You know? And then he goes, "Oh, but if they actually get a patent up, I'll actually get paid a bonus. I'm keeping stum."
Yeah.
And this has the hallmark of, you know, incentives coming up with the wrong outcomes. It's a bit like, you know, paying the CEO to get the company share price up in 6 months and him sacrificing 5 years and 10 years out.
Yes, yes. And it also just, I mean, we know that big companies want to get these patents in their pockets, whether or not they actually care about the quote-unquote innovation behind it as leverage when they're negotiating with other big companies, this isn't how the patent process is supposed to work. It was supposed to target genuine innovation, and a lot of the patent applications that are running through the patent office are just pretty bogus, to my mind.
Well, yes, but, you know, the answer is partly due to the fact that the big companies have to have patent portfolios to keep each other at bay.
Yes,
so
yeah.
If one can get a competitive advantage,
they can use it as a club with which to wail on their opponents.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a portfolio of these patents, so you've sort of got to be able to say, "Here's my jack," and they say, "Well, here's my queen, here's my king, here's my full house." You know,
that's right.
And it's kind of, and then eventually they go, "Okay, we're about even. Let's call it squids. We can use each other's patents and be nice to each other now."
Yeah, it's essentially a form of mutually assured destruction.
We promise not
to go nuclear on each other. Yeah,
yeah. I think this is just your typical large company doing large company stupid stuff.
Yeah, and as some folks commented in the original story, this patent could potentially get. The application could get kicked back by the patent examiners who are saying it's way too broad and come back to us. So we'll see what happens. But if you're interested, we'll have the link in the show notes.
Yeah.
We've got a good story about OpenStack. Is OpenStack real? Is it actually happening? GigaOm had a piece about Walmart running in excess of 100,000 cores of OpenStack in its compute layer.
Yeah, this was this sort of passed by. A lot of people didn't get too much discussion in some quarters. And I've just dug it up today because Walmart, of course, is famous for its ability to run lean at low cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them to be running OpenStack is not a surprise, but for them to be running 100,000 cores, which is probably about 30,000 servers, maybe 20,000 servers, is probably a big surprise. And they're not only just running it as a lab or as a play, there's actually running production load. So they used it through Black Friday. And as the article talks about, basically they see it as a way to, A, keep themselves off Amazon, because cloud computing is kind of a thing, but they also see it as a way of keeping the costs under control, and they're staffing it internally. So they're not, they're actually building their own workforce and building their own resources to run this on a day-to-day.
Mm-hmm. And that's important because, you know, OpenStack is free, but there are operational costs that you have to take into consideration. And as you said, staffing is where the expense is going to come in, but it's great to see them committing to actually staffing a project like this instead of paying someone else.
I think it's a recognition that businesses need. One of the things that a lot of businesses don't see, they say, oh, we're not technology companies, so we won't invest in technology. But I think there's a fallacy there, and at the same level as a lot of companies say, well, I'm not an accounting company, so I won't do accounting. Well, actually, that's false, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because every company is an account. Because if you don't know where your cash flow is, you don't know what your business is doing. If you don't know what your business is doing, you're not in control of the business. Mm-hmm. And this is this mistake that many companies make. They regard IT as a cost center, not as a profit center, or at least not as an absolute critical fund. You know, perhaps the worst case is that there are companies out there who regard IT as a cost or something to be minimized or reduced, in the same way that they want to minimize the cost of their staff or the cost of their buildings. Well, that's admirable, but there's a point at which, you know, if you buy a cheap building and do an incredibly cheap fit out, then you're probably selling cheap products.
Right.
Or you're in financial trouble or, you know, something like that. And this is where IT needs to be. If you're working in a company that regards IT as a cost, then you probably should be thinking about leaving and going somewhere where IT is given the same importance as accounting or sales or whatever it is, because IT has the same impact on the bottom line.
And I agree. It's a mistake to – I mean, you could look at a retail company and say, well, of course they're not a technology company. But if you think about, you know, everything that has to happen on the back end in terms of their supply chain and managing resources and then also having an online presence, of course they're a technology company.
Indeed. They, you know, the technology is the engine that drives everything in the same way that a double entry accounting drives everything in a company. Mm-hmm. It's not the most important thing, right? But – it is critical to the success of the business. IT is, this is getting back to where we were years ago, you know, IT is critical. If you're working in a company that doesn't regard IT as critical, then, you know, start looking for the exit.
That's right.
Because you'll be treated like that, right?
Yeah.
You'll be treated.
That's not an environment you want to be in.
Yeah. If you want to be treated like the cleaning staff, then, yeah, stay. You know, how can we reduce the cost of our cleaning staff? We can make them come around once every hour, and only on Fridays we'll get them to stop at 12 so we can save 4 hours out of the week.
That's right. Or we'll just have our employees clean up.
Yeah. Yeah, issue. We won't get the kitchen. We won't get the cleaners to do the kitchen. We'll get our staff to do that. Yeah.
Issue everyone a handy vac.
Yes.
Neaten up around their desk. Mm-hmm. Other news from GigaOm and also coming out of Mobile World Congress, Intel releasing a slate of chips, some for low-end, high-end mobile devices, but also some networky stuff in there.
Well, these are all just Intel chips. They're all standardized. They're meant to be new chips that are low-powered, meant for mobile, LTE and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Although in true Intel fashion, they're actually not that power-saving. They're just low-powered compared to other Intel chips from what I can see. But what I do see a lot is that these mobile chips are system on a chip. Mm-hmm. So rather than being an Intel and then there's a bunch of other chips that you need to, you know, activate the PCI bus or the network adapter or things like that, these chips are fully self-contained. And the idea is that you just put them on a board and attach a screen and some sort of input to them as a smartphone or a tablet or whatever, and away you go. But these chips are also being repurposed for routers and firewalls. So you can I'm hearing little whispers coming out that these chips are actually going to be put onto like little blades that go into a box that would go out into the branch, and then you would have like a dozen servers in a 1RU box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't need, you know, quad-core Xeon 6-core, you know, hyper-threaded, you know, 128 gigabytes of RAM for something that needs to be out at the edge of the network.
Right, and you would have sort of a virtual router, virtual firewall, virtual load balancing, other things you could spin up.
Yeah.
That's the idea, yeah.
That's the idea. Or you have a virtualization platform that can just, you know, scale horizontally across the available compute resources. Mm-hmm. Now, we're still a ways away from that turning up, happily admit to that, but it's coming.
All right, something to keep an eye on. Hmm. Network neutrality is something that you and I bang on about quite a bit. And have often looked to Europe as a place where they get it right. But I saw this story, it leaped out to me from Ars Technica, about the European Commission, a majority of the 28 member states in the EU, voting in favor of creating a a prioritization tag for specialized services that require need high quality access to the internet. So essentially, knocking down one of the main tenets of network neutrality.
At a rough guess, and I haven't taken too much of a look at this, but what happened was the previous digital commissioner, Neelie Kroes, was a very, very savvy political operative and was able to get this net neutrality legislation put through on her watch. There's been a change of leadership in the European Council and a change of focus. And a lot of the telcos in these countries, like there's 28 member states in the European Council that are allowed to vote here, and a lot of them has nationalized telcos, which are serious revenue generators for the governments themselves. Mm-hmm. And they may be doing some self-interest, you know, like we can – government revenues are tied to the success of monopoly carriers.
Uh-huh. So if I can charge more for video streaming or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. If I can charge more, then that's more tax revenue for the government, in effect, who has a monopoly condition. So – or more fundamental things like, you know, a profitable telco – creates jobs, and if we just – it's a tax without calling it a tax. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there was always going to be a lashback when she finished her term and moved out, and this is probably it. But whether it will actually go through or not is hard to see. Now that the Americans have come up with a very strong net neutrality story, this may founder at the next hurdles.
Yeah, and I don't pretend to know all that much about European politics, but apparently it also has to pass through the European Parliament before any kind of rule can be implemented. So,
yep.
But this is some pushback against net neutrality from a location that I did not anticipate, political self-interest travels everywhere. So,
I suspect there's a lot of, you know, the telcos have been doing lobbying in the ways that they know how.
Yep.
It would be my guess, and you're seeing some of the, you know, that money buys you what you need sometimes. sadly.
Sadly it does.
Yeah. So maybe, yeah.
All right. And then some news. We had cited stories earlier from GigaOm, and today there was a very terse post on the site about GigaOm, I guess, going under.
Yeah. It looks like they've run out of cash. It's a little hard to tell. Basically, they just published a note saying that we're not able to continue operations, so we're ceasing immediately. And that went out at 5 o'clock, you know, San Francisco time, which is where they're headquartered, which is really disappointing because as many – I've seen a number of journalists sort of tweeting because I follow many – saying that it's very sad for journalism because GigaOm showed that, you know, cheap tech reporting – you didn't have to just go down the cheapest route and the crappy titles. You just did quality reporting and you could run a business. I would speculate, you know, I do some work for GigaOm's research and I've met quite a few of the people in the GigaOm operations. And I wonder if the writing or the media, like the blog, or it's not the blog, but the journalism side was quite – looked okay. But I'm wondering if the other parts of the business might have dragged it down. So they had a research arm and they had the conferences.
Right.
That they've been strongly trying to grow and increase the number of events. And maybe they just needed to staff up for those and then they burned a lot of cash and some of them didn't come off and maybe they just ran out of runway.
Well, speaking as someone who is inside a media company that covers technology, it's tough out there now. The revenue model has changed significantly, and there's constantly a balance on cost and quality. But yeah, GigaOm was one of those sites that you could turn to for quality reporting. So it is sad to see that they weren't able to make it work. And who knows? There's this note is, I guess, as I said, is terse, and it's not clear about what's going to happen to the assets of the company. Maybe it'll come back in some other form. But for now, I guess GigaOm is shut down.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll be able to. You know, I'm hopeful that if the debts, they could clear down the loss-making parts of the business and maybe the website could just be born again as a journalism entity.
Yeah, perhaps. Although, as I said, there's it's hard to make money doing straight journalism. I think they had looked at research and live events as a way to, you know, three pillars that could sort of bolster one another and, you know, leverage those strengths together. But it's tough out there, as everybody knows.
Yeah, that's true. It is disappointing, though. It's there's not too many places you can go to for, you know, quality journalism that isn't hysterically hyped or got silly titles or, you know, like the Register in the UK does a great job with funny titles but good quality content.
Right.
But, you know, if you go to The Verge or Business Insider or, you know, any of the other stuff, it's just like, you know, 10 things you didn't know about the Apple Watch. And you're just like, oh, please, aren't we grown-ups yet?
Right.
About being on the internet. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for episode 31. Greg, where can folks find you?
People can find me on my blog at ethereummind.com. On the Twitters is at ethereummind. Of course, I'm around the place doing various things. I would like to ask you that if you do like the show, please head over to iTunes, follow it through from your iTunes on your laptop, and then leave a bit of a review. Give us, tell people that you're enjoying listening to it, and other people might find that and then join us, which would help us to grow the audience for the show, which would be really good for us. Speaking
Absolutely.
Of companies going out of business, because now GigaOm's not there, I'm out of a revenue stream. So,
yeah, definitely leave a review. You can also reach out to us on Twitter if you think there are interesting stories that you might want us to take a look at. You can find me also on Twitter at interop_Andrew. We do hope you leave a review or drop us a note. Greg, I think the last time we did the show, you said you were going to bring virtual donuts, and I didn't get any.
Didn't you? Well, which ones do you want? Do you like the jam donuts or do you want the ones with the chocolate?
I'm more of a chocolate. Yeah.
You're a chocolate donut. Like chocolate on top or chocolate donuts?
Chocolate on top or a glaze. Right. Yeah.
A glaze. I'm a sugar donut man myself.
That's fine with me too.
Just plain donuts, you know, all of the fats and the carbohydrates and the sugars, but just plain. I don't need the extra sugar on top because that makes it okay, right?
Well, I am American. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks.